Spark a conversation, verbal elation, stimulation, education. This is Minaj with the Mary Jane Maven. When we on the air, it's always a lituation. Might talk about some litigation, might talk about some immigration, might talk about some politics, but never talk nonsense. Yes, we on in this live. Watch and listen, it's a vibe. Watch it while you getting high, or you can listen while you drive. Just don't forget to subscribe.
Roll up. I'm trying to get high.
Welcome to Minaj with the Mary Jane Maven podcast with your host, the Mary Jane Maven. I am the producer, the hubby. Follow us on all social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Show us some love and click that subscribe button now. Don't forget to click the bell so you get notifications and click the like button on the videos.
And now, your host.
But back to Russ. I love that you say Russ. Once again, the universe works in her just ultimate wisdom and her divine wisdom because we are super fucking Russ fans.
Dude, oh my God.
Russ is fire to me. I get mad when people don't give me respect. I'm like, do you not listen to his songs? I'm just, when people say that, I'm like, I pull out my phone and I'm like, listen to this.
I've been listening to Russ since before. Like, since he was on the rise. Don't ask me to name a song because my memory sucks, but I've been listening to him forever. My husband was actually into him first, and I started. And I just fell in love because he tells stories in his music.
He tells so good. And then just his, I mean, just the shit that he says. I mean,
and so people,
it's great. My husband.
I liked one song when he first came out. Falling one of his, like, first.
That one.
Whatever the first
when he recorded
was.
In Reno.
No,
falling
I don't
in
know.
Love now.
But then, there you go.
Now. Oh, yeah, I like that song.
Yeah.
So then COVID hit, and I saw the video for that. Like she said, it was in Reno, and went through 2-3 hours
of just Russ.
Watching just Russ videos and Russ songs. And he's been a constant on the playlist since then.
We that same night. I mean, we... Literally, our algorithm for YouTube was nothing but Russ for a good week because we watched everything. Like every video that came up, we watched it. We watched him on Brilliant Idiots. And he had so much knowledge, which he has. Like he's telling people, like, do it on your own. Like I had people clamoring for me. Like people, you know, they offer me this, but I was going to lose all rights to my, you know, what I created. I was going to lose rights to who I was. They wanted to change my image and make me like a pretty boy, you know, kind of rapper. And he's like, I wasn't for that. So he was the very first one that we learned about using a platform for individual artists where this platform helps to put your product and your music out, but you pretty much own all of it, if not all of it. And I liked what he said, but it's funny, the song that I've been playing by him on repeat is Note to Self. Him, Big Sean, Hit Boy, and somebody else.
I'm gonna have to listen to that one.
That it's fire. It's fire. It's off of Chomp 2. Wale and Joey Badass. Look, all they need are the first two verses, which is Russ and Big Sean. And it's like, it's a rap. Talking about saying a song or playing a song on repeat. It was almost like when Peter was playing the bird on this Family Guy. It's just like nose started bleeding, ears started bleeding because they were playing it so much. That was almost me. But it's just, you listen to it. I like his confidence. Like sometimes I want to say quotes from his songs and put it like on my Instagram, but I'm like, oh, somebody's going to think I'm a bitch if I say that. Because if a woman says it, she's a bitch. But when a man says it, he's being aggressive. He's being self-assured. But I think he's fire. So I am happy to hear. We've done an entire episode
on Russ.
Oh, yeah. I during COVID, every time I had something to complain about, my husband's like, stop telling me. Get on the podcast. I was like, let's do it. So during COVID, there were episodes every day. Whether it be 30 minutes and me just really just getting on and ranting. But talking about Russ was one of the episodes. And I was like, please stop doubting him. Like, if you doubt him, unfollow me today. But that is one of the songs that I was playing, Slide by her. And which is still, I mean, I love the baby. I don't care what anybody says, but Shake Something by the baby just makes me want to get on stage and
and shake some.
Yeah, shake something for real. Shake something for real. Oh no, go ahead.
I was gonna say one of my other favorite songs is In a Minute by Little Baby. Like if I listen to any type of music in that genre, it's just that one song. Because that song like gets me in the mood. It gets me motivated to, you know, like getting them, I call it the money mindset, where I'm focused and I wanna create content, or you know, just be creative, whether that's cooking or making a video or doing anything. That's a song I'll listen to first, because he's definitely money motivated.
Yes. So I love that. It makes me feel good to know that I'm not the only one that gets in that mindset. So Drake, to me, pick a verse. That is a money mindset, man. And the fact that he's just like, hate me, I love it, because it only makes me work harder. I love that. So Drake and 21 Savage, No Complaints. Drake's verse on that. That one and not Energy, but oh my gosh, what's the other one that I listened to?
Oh, I've been listening to Drake since he was Jimmy on Degrassi. Oh my God, since he did that one rap in the wheelchair. I used to rap that song he did when he was in the wheelchair on the episode. I was like,
I love that.
I'm in love.
I mean, look, and people say, oh, corny Drake. And I'm like, look, Drake is the epitome of like how men get much more handsome as they get older. Now, the amount of money that he has doesn't hurt. But when people say that Drake is corny, I'm really...
say a hater.
And that's what I say. I'm like, don't talk about Aubrey like that.
I know.
Aubrey Graham didn't do shit to you, but be fantastic. Like, what are you...
Mr.
What are you
Graham
about?
Just followed his dreams. That's all.
And hustled and called it. Like, I am what I am, you know? But he should make some people feel really bad. Him and Russ. Because they throw some lines out there that, you know, people are sensitive and fragile as hell. So you know somebody takes their shit, you know, personally. And that's why they get so many beefs.
Yeah.
He's talking about you. He's just talking about people like you in general, you know? But their hustle is their music, their hustle, super motivating. I love that they bring on different producers and different artists, like Russ with DeVito. I know he always says I say it wrong all the time.
Little bro.
Yeah. Our little bro who's Nigerian, he likes to correct me. And I'm like, well, I don't speak the tongue of Africa or Nigeria. I'm saying it the way that I read it, but he's another good producer and he's huge. He's huge. And
what is his name?
Davido. Oh my God, let me spell it right. D-A-V-I-D-O.
I've possibly listened to something of his, but I'm not too sure. I just started getting into African artists because they are popping off, man.
Look, and do you ever hear it and you just like, it feels like the motherland is calling you, like your hips start grooving?
Yeah, like I just want to dance.
Right.
And it's start moving in ways I never moved before. I'm like, what is this?
Right.
This is another...
All of a sudden I'm taking African dance and I'm really good at it when I hear that. But I always like to think of the Dave Chappelle skit where he says, you know, drums, it gets people off, you know, the black people. We hear drums and we start dancing. what it was, the like congos or the bongos in that skit, and it was like it got the Latins dancing, like everybody was salsa dancing. If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, please go find the skit of Dave Chappelle with John Mayer. It was fantastic. I would love for Dave Chappelle to come out with more a skit show again, but he has way too much money.
No,
way
that, too much money
to be worried
canceled.
About that.
Way too many haters.
He might get canceled so fast if he came out with a skit thing again.
So fast.
Jesus Christ.
And you know what? And he probably wouldn't give a shit.
He probably really would.
His next comedy tour would be the biggest probably ever in history. I like how he handles, you know, all the controversy, and he doesn't shy away from what he said, you know?
Right.
Like, what's I mean, Netflix basically said, shut the hell up. The rest of y'all, we are not canceling Dave Chappelle. Not
when his comedy show came out, I was so happy that I saw it, you know, before all the talk came about and people wanting Netflix to take it down. Cause I was like, like, this is who this man is. He's been like this. You know, he
tied it all together. So if you watch from the very first one to that very last one, which was so controversial, he didn't say anything that was malicious, or he didn't say that he hated, or, you know, let's hurt them or anything like that. He told his story about his evolution to whatever level of acceptance that he feels comfortable with, which that's what we all need to like get comfortable with. What your level of acceptance and understanding is not my responsibility. If you're wanting to ask and learn, then great. But if you're not, and that's your opinion, who the hell am I to let it affect what I do every single day? You know, Dave Chappelle's going to be who he is, whether or not we agree. So I thought it was powerful. I thought that he really, what he wanted to do was start a conversation.
Yeah.
He wanted people to talk about why what he said was so controversial. When a member of the community accepted that, you know, and when he opened his heart and his checkbook to take care of this individual that was part of that community, where was the fault in that? Because he told a joke.
Like, yeah, people are something else.
They're so sensitive.
They just want to find fault in everything that happened. It's just like people talk shit in many ways. You know, it's all how you perceive it. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to perceive it in a way that makes them upset. But everybody else is like, what's the reason?
Yeah.
And they can't explain the reason.
That's how they live. Yeah. Yeah. And that hits on what you're in school for, you know, just psychology and human psychology. Tell us a little bit about, or a lot about, your journey, how you come to be a mom. Obviously, we know how you become a mom, but a wife, a student, you know, a burgeoning and resourceful member of the cannabis community. Tell us about your journey.
Oh, do you want me to start from the beginning? How much time do you have? Because it's a
start
story.
From the beginning. Yes.
Well, for starters, I grew up in the Bay Area. I was born in Louisiana. I only lived there until I was like 3, but I grew up in the Bay in Richmond, Oakland, Vallejo, Concord. Those were my stomping grounds, mostly in Richmond and in Vallejo is my childhood years. But so I grew up in a home that was really broken, and I didn't have a voice in that home. You know, my mother, she was an alcoholic. I really saw her struggle a lot. And because she struggled, we all struggled. I dealt with homelessness. I dealt with a lot of things. I dealt with sexual abuse after I moved out of my mom's house. I dealt with so many hardships in my life. And so when I became an adult, just to make a long story short, I didn't have a voice. I didn't know where my voice was. I didn't know how to speak up for myself. Even till this day, I still struggle with that. So I'm in therapy now. But I feel like I would not be Shelly Blaze if I didn't find my voice.
Yes.
So for a long time, I've always wanted to be in the cannabis community. I loved smoking weed way before I knew the benefits of anything. I started smoking weed at a very young age. I was 11. My cousin, every time I go to her house, she would get me high with her friends. And so that's how that happened. But I didn't really start smoking until I was 18. But then when I had my first child at 20 is when I actually started to think about the benefits of cannabis and how it could help and what it could do and really trying to educate myself. Because I was a stay-at-home mom. I just had a baby. I moved to Oregon with just me and my husband. Didn't know anybody. I live in a white town. Yeah. This town has like a lick of black people.
You
know?
And it's a surprise to see a black family with both parents and acting children and well-adjusted children in towns where they're not used to that. And they will act like you're an anomaly.
Seriously.
So, yeah.
It's ridiculous. But I was dealing with postpartum depression really, really bad. And I remember one day I went to the lactation nurse and I asked her about weed. I was like, can I use weed? Is that okay? And she basically told me, yeah, like everybody here smokes weed, because I was nursing at the time. So I was afraid. But I also knew that I needed to do something because I didn't want to get on medication for mental things like anxiety and depression. I didn't want, I was really strong on nothing changing my brain. Because I loved who I am. I just needed to regulate my emotions. And that's what cannabis did for me. But because I was so afraid of the legal aspect of it, I didn't smoke after I had my kid. I waited till he was like,
if we think that there's a reason to test you or test your baby, we will. And I remember being told that. And my husband's like, there's no reason. Don't worry about it. Like, there's no reason for them to test you.
Right.
Like, let's not worry about it. I want you to be healthy during the time to get him here, you know, healthy.
Yeah, it's a scary process, you know. And for me being a mom, a Black woman here, I was really afraid. You know, I didn't want to have no eyes on me.
Yeah.
But after I talked to that nurse and she let me know that it was okay, I decided to educate myself on the laws in Oregon, specifically since I lived here. And after I did that, I felt good. I started to consume again. But then the other issue I ran into was that I didn't see any Black women on social media talking about weed. Like I saw none, you know. And then so I made my Instagram profile and I slowly started to follow other people in the weed industry. But I didn't actually start speaking on the camera or saying anything until about maybe 3 years ago, I want to say, because I was shy. I was afraid that nobody would like find interest in what I was talking about. I was afraid that because I wasn't a white face that was selling sex, basically, because that's all it was back then, which is women who look really, really good, you know, taking extremely huge bong rips, you know, just it was a whole nother side to cannabis, you know.
Yes, yes. Oh, the waking up fresh in the morning with the, you know, white crop top and white panties, and their faces look just like an angel. And exactly like you said, taking huge bong rips or taking huge dabs, you know.
That was their sunlight
perfectly hitting them on their face. I know exactly what you mean.
And so I felt like I didn't have a place there, you know? And one of the reasons I feel like, cause my page right now, I've had my Instagram page for a little over 5 years, but like I said, I didn't really start digging into it until 3 years ago. And I feel like I have the amount of followers I have now, compared to a lot of people, it's low, but for me, that is a lot. And I love everybody that follows me because those are real people. You know, I made sure that real people were following me and I was able to connect with these women. Like I actually talk to people that follow me. I don't just, they're not just there just to watch my entertainment and me to be a dick and not respond or, you know, communicate with them, because we have to communicate with these people in order to build bridges and close gaps.
Yeah.
And so I decided to be like, you know what? I don't see a Black woman who's consuming. I can't find anybody that I can learn from. Let me be that person. So I just started to educate myself. I got a book, every strain that I had. I wrote about it. I wrote the terpenes down, the percentage, how it made me feel. And that's how I got started. And I started talking about that. And then from that, I started to talk about my family life. I started to show my daily life as a mom.
Yeah.
After consuming, before consuming, just to show that I have a regular life, just like everybody else. Yes. Like, I don't know what you think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That commercial where the girl like melted down into the couch, that commercial from a few years ago, she was high and she just melted. Like, that's not true.
My brain isn't fried eggs, you know, like
at all. Yes.
So, So I felt like if I can show that, then I could help break some sort of gap. Back then, I didn't know really what that was. And even sometimes now, I still do struggle with figuring out exactly what I'm doing on this platform. But just by me being on your podcast shows me that I'm making some sort of difference in what I'm doing. I just want to prove and show that you could be a mom, you could be a wife, you can have a regular job. I work at a freaking elementary school, for God's sakes. I work with children every single day. And what I'm finding out is that a lot of parents consume. Half the parents at my school are weed farmers.
Well,
you know, teachers
especially
consume.
In Oregon now. What else? If you're not like, a weed, what are you doing?
You're either in the restaurant business or you're in the weed business. One or the two, because those are the things booming here.
Yeah.
That I just wanted, sense. I wanted to make a difference. And I said I had to start with myself. You know, yeah. I had to really open up and be vulnerable and take risks. And like opening my family to social media is a huge risk because anything can happen. But I just want to show that if I could do it, then another woman can do it. Like there is a space for each and every one of us here. We just have to find it. But we have to find ourselves in order to do that first.
1,000%. You start speaking to me now. So I'm going to try not to cry because what you're saying is so just on the line of why I do what I do, what my motivation was for starting this podcast, what my motivation was for becoming the Mary Jane Maven, and just allowing the universe to guide me and have other opportunities opened up to me. I started doing affiliate work. And then from affiliate work, I got in as a contractor with one company. And all of a sudden, I started doing education. And then I got into an organization with a group of women out here who were working together to bring the Women of Weed movie. When we were one of the cities that premiered it. So I worked with them within that connection. There was other women of color, one of the women of color within the group. But I felt part of their little group that they had, and they had before I came into it. They were such a resource and helped me in my, you know, in my process. And I told myself to always be aware of the opportunities that were being presented for me, because I definitely had it in my mind that I had control of all that. And it's what I did. And that's part of it. But it's also recognizing the blessings, or like I said, the opportunities that are being placed before you. And especially in this industry, connection, collaboration, building those relationships that are true, you know, genuine relationships, you know, ones that are based on the fact that we're human beings and all that we're doing is trying to make it through this entire journey together. And so being able to naturally grow your social media, that says a lot. I've done the same thing. I'm not where some other people are, you know, that maybe went viral and boomed overnight. And I don't want that, because I don't want that that false love. I don't want that false understanding, because what I do is not false. What I do is really embedded in what I truly believe is my passion and my purpose within this entire structure of life that we're going through. So I have to say, please keep doing what you're doing. You know, that to have another woman on this platform that is, you speak passionately about it. You speak so well. It's what's needed. You know, I could definitely be, you know, a hater and say all this to you, but then after we get offline, bash you on Instagram and try to bring you down because we're trying to do the same thing. But to me, that's working against success. And I think that we're both working with the same goal, like I said, to be resources and inspiration to other women. To have them listen to this podcast or come across your content and then go, shit, so somebody does feel the way that I feel. Like all that I want to do is be a part of something bigger. And it's very exciting to say, I told a girl today that in 10, 15 years, we can say we had a hand in the history of making cannabis completely normalized, making an industry where it's full of entrepreneurs, especially women and people of color and women of color. Like, it's going to be a normalized thing, and we have a part in it. No matter how small it is, we will forever in the history of this world have a footprint in this process.
Yeah. So, for me, it's also like, you know, why not take that chance? Because I don't know if other people notice, but big businesses is taking over the cannabis industry. And they're taking over it so much. To where it's like, you know, why should we sit back and not try to get our little hands up in there too?
Our piece of it, you know? Yes. Yeah.
Because
it was like blood in the water. They smelled the opportunity and all of a sudden they pivoted from whatever else they were making money in to let's all go ahead now and join this cannabis industry. Which is sad to say, but once again, we live in America. It's consumerism at its finest. So that's what's going to happen. But like you said, why not take our piece of the pie?
Exactly. You know, I'm not going to just sit there and not be in this when it's my passion. It's what I always wanted to do. You know, I don't want anybody to hold me back from doing this. Yeah. I almost had a situation with somebody, but
Yeah. And then we'll try. But, you know, that is just a sign from the universe, you know, an obstacle to see how you overcome that. And then how you come out smarter on the other end.